A-M-O-C-O, Amoco. Amoco presents the Edward R. Murrow Program with Don Hollenbeck. Foresight is a lot better than hindsight. It's better to spot trouble ahead and correct it before it happens than it is to wait until that trouble catches you. Your Amoco man uses foresight when he checks your battery. His free test can spot trouble before it happens, and he can fix it in time. If his test shows trouble can't be avoided with your old battery, he'll replace it with an Amoco Super Glass battery. There isn't a better battery made anywhere at any price. And now here is Don Hollenbeck with the news.
Good evening. Quarreling among the armed services has become intensified to the point where a congressional investigation has been called for, and some action by the Joint Chiefs of Staff may have to be taken soon. The latest evidence is the withdrawal of Navy and Marine Air Force participation in the Army Games to be held at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, this month, the biggest games since World War II. The Navy now officially denies the withdrawal arises over command disagreements. It says delay of the exercises from June to August conflicted with its own training plans. There is more to it than this, and the heart of the matter is the human factor. It involves reluctance on the part of a man to take orders from another man with no more stars or bars or eagles or gilt leaves than he has. Or even if not a matter of rank, it's a matter of the man being from another department. A ground officer thinks he knows a lot more about what he wants and needs in the way of air support and cover than an air officer does, but the air officer sees his job another way and is loath to surrender any of his authority, and so it goes. When it comes to a really unified command, there never has been any so far as the air operations of the services are concerned, and CBS military reporter Bill Shadell tells me the differences have now become so pronounced as to cause very serious concern among the Joint Chiefs of Staff. In the House today, Representative Cole of New York said that Congress should investigate the antagonism, and he himself, as a member of the Armed Services Committee, took sides. He said control of tactical air support of ground troops should be removed from the Air Force and given to the Army, which is doing the ground fighting. Or, he said, give it to the Marines. They are acknowledged specialists in using aircraft as flying artillery for ground troops. Cole says the Navy and Marine Air Corps are flying half the airstrikes in Korea despite Air Force publicity. It should be pointed out that Representative Cole has been a member of the Naval Reserve since 1939. Adding fuel to the fire is the campaign for a greatly enlarged strategic bomber department with less attention paid to the aircraft, which would be called upon to work for the ground forces at the scene of action. Shadell points out the rivalries go deep, and he says returning soldiers say they have been exemplified in Korea. There have been long delays in response to ground calls for air support. Not enough planes when and where they were needed. Insufficient briefings of air crews in relation to the job of ground forces. Although the House Armed Services Committee has tried to get the Air High Command to give more emphasis to tactical operations in support of ground, Shadell says this has not been accomplished, nor are aircraft being designed for specific tactical missions. There is still no sign of compromise or settlement of the ceasefire zone dispute, which has deadlocked the Korean truce for days, but Allied officers are now interpreting the communist intransigence and comments by their radio to mean that they may be preparing to accept the Allied terms. This reasoning seems somewhat involved. Its basis is this. Both Beijing and Pyongyang have been broadcasting accounts which distort the Allied attitude. They make it appear the United Nations are demanding a line much farther north than the present fighting front. The theory is then, when the moment comes that the Allied terms must be accepted, it can be made to sound like something of a concession to the Chinese and the North Korean negotiators. As one officer puts it, they're building up the home folks for a letdown. Then, if they accept the buffer zone below the line they say we're asking for, it will look like a communist victory. The men who are using the guns in Korea are doing their best to hasten that decision. Attacks in the center of the line have advanced the front more than 2 miles in that sector. President Truman held his regular news conference today, and he made the following comments. He does not think that General Eisenhower's European duties would interfere if the general felt like being a candidate for the presidency next year. Mr. Truman plans to fly to San Francisco for the opening of the Japanese Treaty Conference in September, a trip he indicates will rule out any cross-country campaign tour in the fall. The president is sorry that Senator Tom Connally of Texas sounded off the other day about economic aid efforts trying to cover the earth with money squeezed from the American taxpayers. Senator Connally has no comment. Mr. Truman has nothing to add to his comments on the new controls bills, which he signed Tuesday night. He did recall one phrase. To the extent that this act permits prices and the cost of living to rise, it will be necessary to allow reasonable adjustments in wages. President Truman says he's trying to find out the facts in the case of Democratic National Chairman William M. Boyle, Jr., said by the St. Louis Post-Dispatch to have received $8,000 in connection with an RFC loan to a printing firm, a statement Boyle has denied. The president's comments on the Boyle case failed to satisfy Democratic Senator Byrd of Virginia. The senator noted the president had said a week ago that he was trying to find out what the facts were, and Byrd indicated it's high time those facts were known. Either Boyle peddled his influence or he didn't, Byrd says. If he used his influence on a government loan, he ought to quit or be fired. The White House has no comment on Senator Byrd's statement, but it does comment on a report printed today in the New York Post. A story that Ambassador-at-Large Averill Harriman is likely to be appointed Secretary of State to replace Dean Acheson, and that's to happen before the 1st of October. The Post says its information comes from a highly placed source close to the White House, and it goes on to say, President Truman is reported to have decided he will let Secretary Acheson retire at the first opportune moment and to have settled on Harriman as his successor. To this, the White House Secretariat says there is no such plan in the works, no plan whatever to relieve Acheson as Secretary of State. Ambassador Harriman has put some good marks in his record in any speculation about a future promotion. He's used his powers of persuasion to the point where the British cabinet mission is now just about to leave London for Tehran to resume the oil talks with the Iran government, and is delaying its departure only because it doesn't want to arrive on the Muslim Sabbath, which is Friday. It will instead arrive day after tomorrow. Harriman's efforts to maintain an amicable atmosphere as the discussions resume have been nullified somewhat by the fact that the British cruiser Euryalus, named for one of the Gorgons, incidentally, has chosen this touchy moment to sail up and down the Persian Gulf on maneuvers, and four more British destroyers have arrived at Abadan. All upsetting to the Iranians, who find it difficult to be good chums in such a martial setting. Also disturbing to the equanimity of all is an announcement by the Iranian government today that a 700-ton Russian naval vessel entered Iranian waters in the Caspian Sea near the port of Astara, swept a frontier post with a searchlight, and was fired on for half an hour by Iranian machine gunners before it withdrew without returning the fire. A protest to the Russian commander across the border is to be followed up by one to Moscow. Well, there's an oil story in this country today that tops anything from the Arabian Nights country for fantasy. The story is told by Representative Willis of Louisiana, who has protested to the Interior Department against what he says is an attempt by a private group to take over offshore Louisiana oil wells by using public land scrip issued years ago. Willis says the group is headed by the former automobile manufacturer E.L. Cord, and he says it's operated this way. It has got together these old land scrip certificates, which were issued by Congress to veterans after the War of 1812, the Indian Wars, and the Civil War. Each certificate entitled the soldier to whom it was issued, or his heirs and assigns, to claim a tract of public land, usually 160 acres. Now, Willis says the Cord group has got together these scrip certificates calling for 1,900 acres of public land, and has filed applications for property around oil wells in the Gulf of Mexico. The theory is this submerged land is public and subject to claims by holders of the scrip. Willis says that what the Cord group is actually doing is laying claim to 40 wells off the Louisiana coast, these wells producing 12,000 barrels of oil a day. A Land Bureau official says Cord had previously tried to apply this scrip plan against the same kind of submerged land off California, but that application had been denied. This one has been referred to the Interior Department's legal department and will get the personal attention of Secretary Chapman himself. Representative Willis says, in conclusion, he doubts very much if it was the intent of Congress in the first place, in the days before there were oil wells, to reward any worthy soldiers with scrip which would entitle them to select and live on a farm at the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico. The government today took additional steps to put the Civil Rights Congress out of business as a bail bondsman. It outlawed $110,000 put up by the Congress as surety for 39 aliens who are facing deportation proceedings, ordered them to surrender forthwith to federal authorities in New York, Boston, Philadelphia, and Detroit. Most of them made it by the deadline. Some were given a little more time. Deportation proceedings have been brought against all 39 because of alleged subversive or communist connections. And since four of the convicted party leaders skipped bail put up by the Congress, the authorities have taken successive steps to see that it furnishes no more such funds. All aliens rearrested today will be detained until bail is furnished, which satisfies government requirements. The Senate Internal Security Subcommittee heard one more chapter in the subversive story today from Hetty Messing. She's the former wife of the fugitive communist Gerhard Eisler, and she is a self-described one-time communist spy in Washington. Mrs. Massing told the committee that as a sort of red recruiting agent in the Capitol in 1933, she had enlisted two State Department aides in her apparatus, the party jargon for the organization. Mrs. Massing identified them as Lawrence Duggan and Noel Field, both now beyond questioning. Duggan is dead of a fall or a jump from a window 3 years ago, and Field has disappeared, last heard of working for the League of Nations in Geneva. After Duggan's death, both FBI and the House Committee on Un-American Activities cleared him of any loyalty taint, but Mrs. Massing's testimony involves him anew, although she gave the committee no specific instances of how he had served her apparatus, nor did she explain Field's connection except to say that both had agreed to work with her group. The House of Representatives today approved and sent to the Senate legislation which would stop American military and economic aid from going to countries which ship war goods to Soviet bloc nations. But under terms of this measure, it's not so rigorous as it sounds. It permits President Truman to order continued assistance to countries shipping other than direct war materials when unusual circumstances indicate that cessation of aid would clearly be detrimental to the United States. The administration won that concession as a substitute for legislation sponsored by Missouri Senator Kim, which now permits the National Security Council to make exceptions, but puts a larger list of products on the blacklist. The president had asked Congress to repeal that on the ground that it endangers national security. At Santa Ana, California this afternoon, a Superior Court jury found Henry Ford McCracken, 34, guilty of child stealing in the death of 10-year-old Patricia Jean Hull. He was acquitted of kidnapping, and the jury had failed to agree on a murder charge. McCracken was accused of enticing the child from a movie, beating her to death, and burying her body. He had pleaded innocent by reason of insanity. One more political note. Bernard Baruch said today that General Eisenhower can serve his country far more as a peacemaker than as a politician. Eisenhower, of course, mentioned as a possible presidential candidate on either the Republican or Democratic ticket, and President Truman himself today said Eisenhower might be a possibility in 1952. This is Don Hollenbeck. I'll be back in a moment with a footnote to the news. Now, here is Bob Dixon.
Glass is tough stuff. It's hard to scratch it. But a glass etcher puts thousands of scratches on a piece of glass in a minute. He just sandblasts it, blowing ordinary sand against it. Now, sand is just one form of dust. If it's hard enough to scratch glass, think what it can do to the moving parts of your car's engine. But when you've got Amoco's Premium Plus Permalube motor oil in your car's crankcase, dirt and dust are cleaned away from moving parts. They just can't stick to moving parts lubricated with Permalube motor oil. For this wonderful oil is a detergent oil, specially refined to clean as it lubricates. That means that your engine gets clean and stays clean as long as you use Permalube motor oil. Your Amoco man has Permalube motor oil in the exact grade recommended and specified by factory engineers. Have him drain the old dirty oil and refill the crankcase with Permalube motor oil. Your engine will last a lot longer and run a lot better when you do. Now here's Don Hollenbeck with a footnote to the day's news.
The gondoliers of Venice have been engaged in a long strike and protest against the use of motorboats on the canals. But the strike has now been settled according to the time-worn formula: if you can't lick 'em, join 'em. The gondoliers have taken out licenses to operate some motorboats themselves. And that's the footnote to the news.
When you drive into an Amoco station, you'll see another pump beside the Amoco gas pump. It's the American gas pump. And if you're a user of regular gas, this is the gas for you. American gas is refined by the makers of Amoco gas. It's the leader in its field. And from Maine to Florida, it's known as the best of the regulars. For American gas, for all famous Amoco products, stop at the Amoco sign of greater values. Tune in to Don Hollenbeck tomorrow. This is the CBS Radio Network.